Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
If you were to measure our times by typical progressive standards, I think you might consider them tragic. The social safety net of our country is being shredded. Hatred and greed are being condoned, and immigrants are being cruelly rejected. And there is no law on the books to keep the Earth below 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit, beyond which scientists predict that the life-supporting systems upon which we depend will start to fall apart. Many of the causes for which we have all striven have been rejected, upended, and undermined. Some of us have been left in despair, others resentful, some fearful, and some of us depressed. A number of us, though, are just plain tired from working so hard for so much that has been in doubt or been lost. These times call upon us to do more than just to work harder, raise more money, or put in more effort. They call for more than programmatic changes or candidate changes or even movement changes. They call for a transformation of our motivation. I would like us to look at our motivation for progress, to ask ourselves some questions such as, do we usually find ourselves reacting to outside events that surprise us or don't, or do we respond more from an internal sense of inspiration? Are we more reactive or are we more proactive? Do we find ourselves looking at what's wrong and trying to correct it? Or do we also look at what's right and try to expand it? What is the great spiritual strength from which we draw for our actions, and personal as well as political? Is there, I ask, a deeper spiritual grounding from which we can become our typical activist? Do you feel spiritually grounded? We are spiritually grounded. That is the meaning of the word inherent in our first principle, where we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. The poet Louise Edrich put it this way: if you exist, then you are loved by existence. We are innately worthy. In the Buddhist perspective in which I'm rooted, this means that we all have the capacity to be awakened to the reality of the way things are, to the suffering that is implicit in the world's imperfection, and to our capacity, above all, to be at peace in the midst of the world's troubles, that means right now. It is from something like this kind of consciousness that I believe that we must begin all of our work to come for personal and political change. Albert Einstein noted that the quality of our consciousness influences everything. He was very fond of reminding us that it is the consciousness from which we act that creates the conditions we manifest. And he very famously warned us that we can't fix the problems of the world with the same consciousness by which we created them. I believe that we have failed to fix such problems because we have sought to solve them with the very same consciousness by which we have created them in the first place. That's an old consciousness that included a belief that our happiness that is dependent upon having the satisfactory conditions around us. That is a consciousness that is not rooted in our sense of intrinsic wholeness and connectedness, which instead says that we, but instead it says we are dependent upon things that surround us. The Czech dissident Václav Havel was quite wise and prescient about political change and the role of consciousness. His Civic Forum party played a major role in the Velvet Revolution that toppled communism in Czechoslovakia. And for his subversion, he spent many terms in prison, the longest being 4 years. Considered by many to be a Unitarian, he served as the last president of Czechoslovakia and then as the first president of the new Czech Republic. He was a playwright as well as a statesman, and he wrote in The Power of the Powerless that a better system will not automatically ensure a better life. In fact, the opposite is true. Only by creating a better life can a better system be developed. That is, by beginning from the depths of our own living. At a recent minister's meeting, the Reverend David Horst, who's minister of our neighboring congregation in Paramus, challenged us ministers to answer 3 questions he posed that have to do with our social activism. And I offer them to you for your reflection. The first is, what if we were to start from the center, our center, and build the mosaic of justice outward from there? The second is, what if our activism were to begin with silence and stillness? And the third, what if we were to ask first, what or where is my aliveness, before we ask, how can I help? Can we look at the first question together? So often we do not focus in this way. We focus primarily instead on the circumference, on our surroundings, and what we want to correct or improve. We focus on what's wrong with things. So the idea of beginning at the center of our innate worthiness and good feeling requires for some of us a 180-degree turn around in consciousness. It can be a radical step. And that's why I'm suggesting it. Starting from our center, which is in wholeness, upends our entire value system. It would require grounding ourselves in spiritual satisfaction, valuing inside transformation as a practice producing outside reformation. We might begin in this way by looking in a different way, not so much in terms of correction and reform out there or in our own selves, replacing our shoulds, judgments, and protests could empower us then to move forward to promote civil dialogue, perhaps even across the divisions of Congress. When we become internally nonviolent, we will empower ourselves to risk further nonviolent actions in society for justice and human rights. Acting from the inside out, we never have to worry about burnout, and we never will want to seek to cop out or give up. There is no burnout because we are focused on what we can do instead of on what needs doing, because there's always something we can do, even if it is as little as simply pausing before we make our next decisions. Consider for a moment, if you will, what we have learned from neuroscience about the importance of focusing inward. We now know that when we feel threatened, our physiologically primitive nervous system circuits fire up and they stimulate muscle movements that are intended to protect us by fight, by fight or freeze behavior. We've learned through recent urological research that it takes now, people say, from 5 to 7 positive affirmations to undo one negative one because of our evolutionary heritage. What, we might ask, does this knowledge imply about the amount of time we fasten onto precedential missteps compared with the time we focus upon the courageous actions, heroic responses, and compassionate behavior that so many are exercising today? What if we were to keep in mind this ratio in our personal conversations with each other? Now, the second question, what if our activism were to begin with silence and stillness? This proposal may sound preposterous to our ears, used to the news dictum that a blank spot in airtime is worthless. And we so often seem to guide our personal conversations by a similar premise. We are accustomed so much to prodding each other into action by argument or by urgency or a sense of emergency. We utilize threats that activate our most primitive reactive response of fight, flight, or freeze. We begin to reconstitute our consciousness when we can begin to initially pause, to remind ourselves that our primitive reactions will continue to originate unconsciously, and we may not be able to prevent them. But we also know that as precious human beings, we have evolved a unique capacity, which is the capacity to veto these primitive responses and to instead respond with empathy and compassion. But our veto power has one requirement. Our mind requires at least a microsecond to reconsider. But in this pause, we may begin a new direction. Buddhist coach Ek of the Thai wild boar soccer team that recently helped his boys escape from their cave did so by first calming them. Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh noted that when boats would carry refugees to safety during the Vietnam War, they were terrorized by sea pirates, rapists, and predators, but that one calm person in the stern of a boat could bring civility to the entire boat. You could say that we are all stuck in caves of doubt, worry, fear, and desperation. We are all boat people, refugees from lands of terror, escapees from violence foisted upon us by our color, by our gender. We are all refugees on this blue boat home. We need those who can pause amidst the fury. Poet Naomi Remen writes, she says, helping, fixing, and serving. These three are different, three different ways of seeing life. When you help, she says, you see life as weak. When you fix, you see life as broken. When you serve, you see life as whole. Fixing and helping, she says, may be the work of the ego, but service is the work of the soul. It is soul work that we are about today. Work that originates from our center in wholeness and speaks from stillness. And so for the third question, what if we were to ask, first of all, what or where is my aliveness before we ask, how can I help? After all, we don't really believe, do we, that if we are an unhappy, unsatisfied, frightened people, we can from such a mood create a world that is calm, complete, contented, and peaceful? How could we really believe such a thing? We all know what aliveness is. It's that sense of inner energy. It's that quickening of our spirit, a daring of courage, a risking of love, a rising of joy, unforeseen laughter, sometimes dipping into deep sadness or sharp anger, whatever it is that leads us to venture into new territory. We may have dulled ourselves against this aliveness by habit, distracted ourselves by the disturbing events around us, or perhaps rationalized that the only reason is what is important, or maybe we've covered it with cynicism. But it's there for each of us to live from. A few years ago, James Newman, age 14, walked into the halls of Pine Middle School in Reno, Nevada, just after 9 a.m., and fired 3 shots, hitting one boy in the upper arm and a girl by a ricocheted bullet. The third shot did not hit anyone. Gym teacher Janice Fagan very briefly paused, then calmly walked up to the boy and squared off with him and his gun face to face and asked him to put his gun down, which he did. Then she embraced him in a bear hug until other teachers arrived to help. She told him that she wouldn't leave him alone. She reassured him that she would even accompany him to the police station to make sure that he was safe and that the police didn't hurt him. Reacting in surprise, Reno police officer Lieutenant Ron Donnelly exclaimed, "That's not a natural reaction to hear gunfire and walk towards the gunfire." Now, he's right. It is not our normal reaction, but he's wrong if he says it's not our natural reaction. It is just that it only takes a moment for some of us to attend to it. It is a new learning for us recently evolved human beings. We have to study it, practice it, and then it will become habitual. When we act from this sacred place, we don't act in response to what others request or what they demand, but we act from what impels us forward. Janice Fagan told the authorities, "I was sad for him because I know him, and I know at this point his life will not be the same again." Sacred activism is centripetal. It spins our good energy outwards. On the other hand, you might say it's like a magnet. It draws good energy toward us. Just as a magnet placed against iron magnetizes the iron but doesn't lose its own strength, so when we act from our spiritual core, we do not burn out, but we gain energy. When we act from our sacred space, we act less from the needs of the world, but more from the needs of our heart. We look at what could be right, and we try to expand it. We don't demand because we feel entitled, but we give because we are empowered. Robert Louis Stevenson reminded us, he said, "You can give without loving, yes, but you cannot love without giving." As a spiritual people, as an association of Unitarian Universalists, we have a mission. We know what it is to affirm the inherent worth of us all. Our mission becomes not so much to lead the people into making changes we desire, as it is to change those who are doing the leading to act from their spiritual essence. Ours is not so much to lead the changes that we so deeply long for, but it is to change the very nature of the leading. Reverend Frederick Buchner, a Presbyterian minister, theologian, and writer, was once asked, "How shall we guide our life?" He answered, our calling is to the place where our deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. To paraphrase Methodist minister, Reverend Howard Thurman, stop asking what the world needs. Ask, what makes you come alive? And then go do it. Because what the world needs most is people who are fully alive. May we be such a people. And may every one of us sacredly act for change in this very troubled world.